97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
DJ, make some noise!
Meet me at the hotel room.
What a great way to start Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors, Carl Middleman.
Is this Baby Shark?
No, this is Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 305.
Pitbull. Who, honestly, I had no idea, Carl, what Pitbull looked like because I'm not a listener to his music until I saw a picture of you dressed like. So I saw a picture of you before I ever saw a picture of Pitbull.
I'm trying to look like Pitbull. Front of pictures of Pitbull.
Yeah.
But because, Mark, I play the music at the St. Louis Blues games, I know Pitbull intimately. Because they're great dance songs.
Yeah, they are. You gotta admit that. Let me ask you, Carl, though, what is on your head in these pictures that I saw online?
That is a bald cap, and that is my natural facial hair, just enhanced with a little bit of eyebrow pencil.
Whoa, you prepped for this.
So did
people get pictures with you? Were you like a hot item out there at the concert?
Well, first of all, there were about 100 people dressed as Pitbull, but I was the only one who was not a teenage girl. And I did get my picture taken with a lot of people. You can see those pictures on Instagram or Twitter at @_CarlTheIntern. I had those aviators on, so I couldn't see, and I didn't know who I was getting pictures taken with, so I made sure I didn't touch anybody.
His wife stayed about 5 paces behind. I don't think she wanted to identify with Carl that night.
We walked out of the hotel and somebody said, "Oh my God, is that Pitbull?" And I said, "It is now worth it." Because
yeah, but I'm going to challenge on that a little bit. It's pretty obvious. You don't have to be too close to see that it's a bald wig.
Right. But if you're not
looking, were they drunk?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That might explain it.
It was still fantastic.
That might explain it.
That was part of the great outdoors of the show.
That was my outdoors last weekend.
While Carl was doing that, I took my great outdoors, my trailer, and hauled it across country to a campsite just outside of Lexington, Kentucky, to partake in the Bourbon Trail this past weekend. And I have to tell you, Bo, it's something you've got to do sometime, whether you're a big fan of that wonderful brown juice or not. You got to go on the Bourbon Trail at some point.
And did you? Is this like a bar crawl kind of thing or distillery crawl?
It's a lot more organized than that.
Well, it's,
it has to be.
It's more organized, but it's also some pretty powerful stuff. So if you're going to several of these distilleries in a row, where this is important. You can visit the distillery and go to the gift store without taking the tour. But if you take the tour, you also get samples along the way. So if you're going to be doing shots, 1 ounce shots, basically, is the pour they would give you of samples of their different bourbons, you want to have somebody else driving the bus, which is why we set it up as a tour, and tour companies have grown up. This cottage business has grown up in central Kentucky where you can actually rent a tour bus and with a driver who takes you to the distilleries that you want to visit in that particular area. So you don't have to drive.
I would not want to have to clean that bus floor, I'll tell you that.
I'm sure things get out of hand sometimes.
Well, if you've ever gone to Washington, the wine country, Herman, I mean, you know, same kind of thing. Those little bitty samples certainly add up, and they add up quickly. Did you see anybody down there that looked like Pitbull while you were there?
I did not, oddly enough.
Oh, look at that.
It's just very weird.
Because they were all at the sold-out show. That's it.
So this is an opportunity. I'm going to presume that you were able to write this trip off because did you do a podcast out there?
No, but I'm going to do a podcast that should be posted up on the website shortly. I do a personal podcast called The Mash for listeners who've not been informed about that before. Wherever you get your download of the podcast for Second Amendment and the Great Outdoors, you can also search for The Mash. It's got a picture of a hand holding up a neat pour, and it's just about bourbon and things that go well with bourbon. And I've done an episode in the past about the Bourbon Trail. I talked to the people that market that and you can do a variety of different loops that include the well-known distillers, but distilleries have popped up all over the state of Kentucky. So there are a lot of craft distilleries like Castle and Key and others like that, where you can go visit and sample their goods as well. So you can visit the Bourbon Trail five times and still not visit all the distilleries. You can kind of mix and match when you go down there. So it's a great resource. My next version of the MASH, my next episode, is going to focus primarily on my visit and things we learned on our first official tour of the on what you should and shouldn't do and what we would do differently next time. So I think
sounds like a sponsorship idea for the MASH, doesn't
it? I'm just telling you. I think it's going to be you can learn along with us because we had a great time. But if we were doing it again, there's some things we might have done differently. And
isn't that the way it goes, though?
Probably.
You know, you try and do something, and you know, like it's great bonfire season with these cool temperatures at night. You know, first time you maybe lit a bonfire, used a little gasoline. Not a good idea. You learn some tricks on what not to do, even on a bourbon tour like that. So how many square miles are you covering, Mark, when you, well, I guess I need to listen to the MASH, but I mean, can you tell us like how many square miles are these distilleries in?
I was not a math major, so I don't know if I can determine that exact number.
Nor was he driving.
we probably drove 25 to 30 miles between one of the distilleries, for example. So sometimes a couple of them are bunched up together, like a Woodford Reserve and Four Roses and Maker's Mark are all not all that far apart. But then Buffalo Trace is up in Frankfort, which is probably 20 plus miles from that location. And it's not a problem to do them all in the same day. The point is you really need to plan it out and you have to have somebody else driving for that reason, because it's just not worth the risk, right?
Of course. And I'm sure that those small craft bourbon places are kind of like the craft beer places. These people are like scientists and they're so passionate about what they do. I can only imagine it's probably ramped up for the bourbon world.
Very true. And here's the thing about it. I mean, it's not magic. You have to know how to obviously use the right corn and the right barley and all of that stuff and get the MASH, hence the name of the podcast, right. And then you distill it and you put it into barrels. It goes in there clear, like, you know, moonshine, and then it ages in the barrels where it soaks in and out of the wood that's been charred to a certain degree, depending on the distillery, and then you get the product that comes out of that. And the end product is certainly impacted by the recipe, but it's also impacted by how long it aged. And I found out that I'm a fan of most bourbons I drink. I want to be at least 5 years aged. It depends on where it ages in the rickhouse. If it's on the bottom floor where it stayed cooler, on the top floor where it gets hotter in the summer, because those aren't air conditioned, so they get hot in the summer and colder in the winter than the ones on the bottom floor. It all goes into the final taste of the bourbon. And you get that the tour is a great way to kind of pinpoint exactly what you like. Me personally, I love a higher corn mash bill in my bourbon. So I got to go to Buffalo Trace and find a coveted bottle of Blanton's while I was there. And I got to buy some Weller while I was there. I love both of those bourbons. So it's a great example to an opportunity to get to purchase bottles, which aren't easy to find if you just walk into your local liquor store.
Yeah, I've heard Buffalo Trace is over the top. Never tried it myself, but that's a great tease for the MASH podcast. And that tour of Kentucky bourbon distilleries is going to be the subject for this week's MASH podcast. That's pretty cool that you guys did that.
Yeah.
Now, was that a group of people that you knew when, or just you and your wife?
I'm part of a whiskey society, and we decided as a group to go down there. We probably 10 or 11 of us ended up making the trip. It was a really good time.
Nice.
Fantastic.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
And you solved all the world's problems while you were sipping on that MASH.
Yeah, we sure did. Now, maybe if you like sipping on something, it doesn't have to be bourbon. When you're out at, wherever you go, choose to go hunt. That's something people do a lot. We just discovered, we're going to learn a lot today on this show. One thing is about raccoon hunting. which I don't know. I have never been raccoon hunting myself. I had an uncle who used to do it all the time. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that came up. And when you think of raccoon, a lot of people are thinking, oh, the cute little fuzzy animal or the cartoon. No, we're going to talk to a legit raccoon hunter. Christina Hibbler is going to join us from the Missouri Department of Conservation coming up in just a moment on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Stay right there.
Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me.
Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox here along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman. And Carl, that theme music threw me off there a little bit.
Well, there's a reason.
Okay.
Because our next guest is going to talk about a specific animal. And in the movie Guardians of the Galaxy,
This was the song
yes, where you see this animal for the first time.
Nice. I do vaguely remember that. We're coming up on hunting season. I think bow season for deer starts later this month, the 14th or 15th. And it's also, we're coming up on a very important season for, in my family growing up, I had an uncle who went raccoon hunting. He had dogs. He loved the sound of them and following them through the fields. And we're about to enter raccoon season, right, Bo?
I have, yeah. And I'm always intrigued by it. A friend of mine, Cowboy Tommy, this guy was born 100 years too late. He was the first coon hunter I knew, and he had the dogs. And he talked about, you know, smoking them out and doing just the stories, nighttime hunting for raccoons. Conservation agent Christina Hibbler is from the Missouri Department of Conservation. And we are here to talk about raccoons. And we understand that you, Christina, are an expert. Is that true?
You know, I wouldn't go with a full expert, but I know a thing or two.
That's good. Welcome into
That's
the
good
show.
Start.
How are y'all doing today?
Good. And do you have a raccoon hunting experience yourself?
I do. I do. So I've trapped them and I've hunted them, so I know that, and I enforce the rules for it. So I sure hope I know something about
it. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's start off with that. When does the season start, Christina, and how long does it run?
So actually, just recently, we've kind of had a new season for raccoon come in. So prior to this year, the season ran from November 15th to February 28th. That was kind of your typical fur bearer season. Kind of starts around firearms deer season and whatnot. To help people reach their management goals, you know, especially for, because raccoons and some other fur bearers can be a bit of a problem. We instituted a new season going from August 1st to October 15th. So, you can hunt and trap raccoon from August 1st to October 15th, as well as November 15th to February 28th. And, you know, that's kind of how it runs.
Interesting. So for people who are doing this, if they're doing it for the fur, is there a quality difference later in the season?
Absolutely. So your pelts are obviously going to be better later in the season, and that's, you know, historically why those trapping seasons are set so late. You really, in my opinion, the furs that you're going to get if you're hunting them during the summer are not going to be anywhere near the quality that you're getting on those winter furs. Obviously, I'm sure people know most mammals, they'll get a better coat later in the year to keep warm during the winter. You don't want to get a thinner pelt or all that. But most of the people who are raccoon hunting, unfortunately, fur prices are so low now. They're not turning those pelts in. You know, even a good pelt, you're getting like $1.50 for it now. So people who are hunting and trapping raccoons, they're not doing it for the money. It's not like back in the 80s where people were out picking up roadkill because the pelts fetch such a good price.
Yeah.
it's for recreation value, and it's for managing their land. So that's kind of why. But
Conservation agent Christina Hibbler from the Missouri Department of Conservation is our guest talking about coon hunting, and it is on. It's exciting because there is so much involved, not only the firearm that you used. Do people bow hunt these as well?
Oh, they do. It's very rare, though. In my whole career, I've only had one person using archery methods to hunt raccoons I've come across in the field. People do it, but it's pretty rare. Typically, the people who are end up taking or harvesting fur bears with a bow, they're going to shoot a bobcat while they're out bow hunting or whatnot. But people just going out and hunting raccoons with a bow, it's pretty rare.
Well, raccoons are so cute, right? They're so cute, and cartoons have probably ruined it for me. But when you see the raccoon hunters that go out and do this, are they doing it because the raccoons are tearing up their land? And if so, how bad of a nuisance are they? Because we hear about hogs and them tearing up the ground. Are raccoons really in that category?
So raccoons can do quite a bit of damage, and typically the damage that you're going to have is to poultry, so things like chickens and your ducks. I got a buddy who raises chickens, and she lost half her flock to raccoons. So there certainly is a reason to be thinning out their population and whatnot, but that's typically the damage we see from raccoons. Now, if you are experiencing damage from a raccoon or possums, muskrats, things like that, in the state of Missouri, you're allowed to dispatch that animal without getting permission from a conservation agent. The only thing you have to do is call a conservation agent within 24 hours and say, hey, you know, this raccoon was killing my chickens. I dispatched the animal, whatnot. So that's the owner can protect their property. There's an exception. Obviously, you can't just kill deer, turkey, black bear, or mountain lions, unless, you know, the mountain lion or the bear are actively, you know, killing something at that time. But for most animals, you know, be it raccoon, squirrel, possum, you can go ahead and dispatch those without permission and then just let your conservation agent know that you had to do that within 24 hours.
Wow. So, Christina, this may not be your area of expertise, but I'll ask because of a comment you made earlier. When I was a teenager, Bo Matthews, besides being an ace fisherman, I used to trap. I had a neighbor. I lived in Southern Ohio. I had a neighbor who was heavily into trapping to supplement his income, and he was mostly trapping red and gray fox. The red fox was the prize back then. The gray fox wasn't worth quite as much. He was trapping mink. He was trapping a raccoon. That's primarily what he was out looking for, sometimes muskrat. And back then, you could get $75 for a red fox, if I remember correctly, maybe closer to $50 for a gray fox. Yeah, not that red fox.
Right.
And raccoon prices, if I remember, were somewhere in the ballpark of $25 a pelt. Any idea why that has fallen so much? Is it just a demand issue?
Well, it's a demand issue. So there's a lot of people who are concerned about how ethical it is to wear fur, of course.
Right.
And then a lot of, so, you know, otter and pelts like that, a lot of those go over to eastern countries like China or Russia, and they use them for their military uniforms. Those are, you know, I mean, we currently have some issues with those countries, so we're not shipping the volume over at all that we used to. The market has plummeted for furs, and so that's essentially the reason that we're not getting the prices that you used to be able to.
Yeah. Well, St. Louis used to be a fur trading capital. I remember the big fur trading building was right there at the right by Channel 4, right by the arch there at Memorial Drive, right? 4th and Memorial.
Yeah. You're absolutely correct. I mean, and not just fur. I mean, St. Louis used to be, especially in, you know, in terms of Missouri itself, St. Louis used to be a hub for any wildlife market. The big problem, you know, with ducks and meat markets, you know, rabbits and whatnot, all those market hunters, that's where, you know, you're at the confluence of two big rivers. And so people would come and sell whatever wildlife they had at, you know, in St. Louis. And it kind of created some devastation on our local populations and whatnot. But luckily, there's not much commercialization of wildlife anymore, and that's how we'd like to keep it.
Yeah.
Well, the sport is out there for sure, Christina. Christina Hibbler is from the Missouri Department of Conservation, our guest. And I'll tell you, Mark, you love going to concerts. You've ever been to an old rock house concert?
The old rock house?
At the old rock house?
Yes.
There's a reason I brought this up.
Okay.
Because the old rock house used to sit, and it was a fur trading headquarters on the site of the arch, like you had mentioned, and they replicated that building with stones from that original site. Isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah.
Christina, I do want to ask you, though, my buddy Cowboy Tommy that I mentioned earlier, he was not a raccoon eater. Do you have a fancy recipe for a raccoon that you hunt?
So, you know, there are people who eat them, and I have eaten them. There's former Lincoln County game warden or conservation agent, Tim McDaniel, would make, it was almost like a pulled pork out of them. He would roast them low and slow and smother it in barbecue sauce. And it was, it tasted like a really rich pulled pork. So, I mean, I know that grosses a lot of people out, but,
not me.
Carl's nodding.
What you kill, so.
Yeah, it does not taste, like it tastes good.
No, yeah, it's like a dark meat.
I'll be the first one to admit that I enjoy the taste of raccoon. So.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a dark meat, like a dark turkey or a dark chicken, they say. Well, just serve me chicken then, for crying out loud.
No kidding. So, Christina,
chickens aren't fun to hunt.
Christina, before we let you go, I have to ask, and I'm not trying to date you here in terms of age, but did I hear the rumor that you, as a child growing up, used to listen to Bo Matthews on the radio?
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. My dad, whenever we were in the car, we had to have Bo on. So.
Oh, that's so awesome. Hey, you were raised on country music. You can't be all bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Loved to have many great memories of listening to you with my dad. So.
Oh, that's sweet. Christina, have we ever met at a concert or something? Or did I meet your dad?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Okay. Right. No, because he had you out coon hunting. That's what he had you doing. It's nice to talk to you for sure.
But nope.
Christina, thank you. It's been great having you on today. Thanks for the information. We knew the season was here. I didn't realize it had been expanded. So that's we learned a lot today. Thank you.
Yep. Hey, thank you. And you guys have a wonderful day.
We will. We appreciate that. Conservation agent Christina Hibbler, Missouri Department of Conservation, because a lot of seasons are coming up. Apparently, we're already in raccoon season. It started in August. Who knew?
Love that.
Dove season started last
weekend. Yeah, that was dove season. That's always humbling.
Good stuff. Okay, well, that's about the hunting. More about the Second Amendment and the Second Amendment. That's the great outdoors part of it, I guess. The Second Amendment is definitely in the forefront of gun owners in California. We're going to talk to a representative with the gun owners of California about possibly some strange laws going on out there. You know, things happen on the coast and they move to the middle. We got to stop it, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Coming up right here on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. We're back in a minute.
Hooked on a feeling.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews. That is Mark Cox. And Carl, the intern middleman, is our executive producer. You're not the intern no more. He's the pew-pew man.
Pew-pew.
We are bringing this show to you in part by Razorback Armory. They are featuring Mantis X. You want a demonstration of this so you don't just buy it online blind because you don't know what it is? Go into Razorback Armory and find out more about Mantis X, how you can become a better shooter without wasting money on ammo. You're going to love the system. They've got it there at Razorback Armory. Go to RazorbackArmory.com. Have you ever used the Mantis X?
I have not, but if it'll make me a better shooter, I'm going to have to look into that.
Dude, after 20 minutes, 94% of people are better shooters. It's that good. It's amazing technology. It really is.
So
check them out, Razorback Armory.
It takes the gun out of my hand and it shoots it, and then I'm a better shooter?
maybe for you.
I'm just speculating here, so...
Okay, so as I mentioned leading up to this segment, that it seems like trends start on the coast, and we're not just talking fashion trends, we're talking food trends, we're talking laws and ideas of laws. Sam Paredes is the executive director of the Gun Owners of California. He's also a member of the board of directors of Gun Owners of America and treasurer of Gun Owners Foundation. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Sam, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing just great, and it's a pleasure and honor to be with you, man.
Yeah, it's great having you on. Mark Cox here and as well. And, you know, I've watched from a distance what goes on in places like California and New York. And just recently we had this great Supreme Court decision kind of clarifying that these states couldn't force you to go to extreme lengths to protect yourself, as the Second Amendment allows. And yet in California and New York, they both immediately went on the attack and tried to figure out ways around the Supreme Court decision. Isn't that correct?
You are absolutely correct. Unfortunately, in New York, so far they have succeeded in passing the law and putting it into effect. Here in California, with a whole lot of hard work, we were able to defeat Senate Bill 918 that was going to emulate what they did in New York and put it on steroids to make it virtually worthless to have a concealed carry weapons permit here in the state of California. But you're correct. They hate the Second Amendment. They hate the Constitution. They hate the Supreme Court, and they hate gun owners. So they're going to do everything they possibly can to prevent people from legally carrying firearms outside of their homes.
That is crazy. Sam Paredes, and the lawlessness that's going on out there is frightening for us to see on our TV screens. How long have you been a resident of California?
All my life, born in 1956, so 65 years, going on 66 years as a resident.
Wow.
Have you ever thought, because of gun laws alone, have you ever thought about moving to another state that's more Second Amendment friendly?
You know, the thought has been gone through my brain, but it was very fast and fleeting. This is my state. We understand that California either affects or infects the rest of the country. And myself and my family decided to dedicate our lives to fighting to protect and defend the Second Amendment, restore it here in California. And this is a beautiful state with a lot of wonderful people. And yeah, we have tons and tons of knuckleheads and a government that is going down the toilet. But that pendulum, too, will swing one day. But we are going to be here to fight for the Second Amendment. And now that we have the results of the Supreme Court Bruin decision, we have the tools that we need to overturn the vast majority of all gun control laws here in the state of California. And it's not going to be done without the other side going kicking and screaming. But we are confident that that California will be a Second Amendment friendly state, even though the leaders will hate it all the way.
It's true. Sam Paredes, our guest, executive director with Gun Owners of California. Maybe you could remind people, Sam, for those of us here in flyover country, what it was like in a lot of areas in California before the Supreme Court sort of stepped in here. You couldn't. Like, I can go buy a gun and I can apply for concealed carry, or I can exercise my rights. We're an open carry state in Missouri. Mm-hmm. You don't even need a license anymore to carry concealed. But in California, mm-hmm. Didn't you have to prove to the local sheriff that you felt you were under some sort of a specific threat before you could exercise your Second Amendment rights?
You are, again, absolutely correct. In the California statutes governing concealed carry weapons permits, the sheriff was required to ask for a reason of good cause and good moral character in order to even consider issuing a concealed carry weapons permit to an applicant. Now, people need to understand that the landmass, the vast majority of California is just like the rest of free America. It is the greater Bay Area and the greater Los Angeles area that constitute the significant majority of the population. But in the rest of the counties, we had sheriffs that are, they consider themselves constitutional sheriffs. If somebody came in, wanted a CCW, they put down, what's your good cause? Self-defense, granted. What's your good cause? You know, for exercising my Second Amendment rights, granted. So there were thousands upon thousands of CCWs that were issued to those who lived in the non-population centers. But in the greater, for the majority of the people of the state of California, you had to prove that, you know, I'm a jewelry dealer and I transport $1 million from my business to the bank every day. And then they might consider giving you a concealed weapons permit that you can use only when you're transporting the money. They would limit it. But the vast majority of them said, you know what, there's no sufficient cause. The good sheriffs were saying, when people would say, well, I need to give a reason, and he says, well, do I need to give you a reason to give? How about you drive on dark streets at night alone, which is the definition of everybody in the county I live, because it's a rural county. So they said they just put down self-defense, personal protection. That's it. But in Los Angeles and those things are changing in L.A. and Orange County. It's going much slower in the Bay Area. But it had to be a specific reason. And then the attorney general, once the Bruin decision came down, they told all of the sheriffs, okay, you cannot use that subjective reason anymore. But you know what? You guys need to consider the good moral character. So how you evaluate good moral character gives you the ability to deny CCWs. Well, that's a load of sheep dip. That's the way they're trying to get around the law. And in this bill that they tried to pass, they actually acknowledged that good moral character clause was not sufficient because it was too subjective.
And yeah, so, absolutely it is.
We're in a fight in California, but guys, it is so much fun to get into a fight when you know absolutely sure that you're going to win. Yeah. And that's what we're doing here.
I love that.
Sam Paredes is the executive director of Gun Owners of California. And you know what? I'm proud of you for taking up the fight and staying in California. We do have homes for sale here in Missouri, just throwing it out there. But let's remind the listeners of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors what happened not too awful long ago when the attorney general leaked the names and addresses of California citizens who were in the state system because they gun owners on June 30th of this year, following the SCOTUS gun ruling, that it was published out there. However brief, it was still out there. What was the thinking? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, when the legislation was going through the Capitol, allowing the Attorney General to compile all of these databases and to share it with educational institutions, of course, only the educational and research institutions that they thought should get this information. We testified that there is no way that you're going to be able to secure this information, and it is so vital. You need to redact the critical data on all of these applications so that it cannot be put out into the public. They said, no, we've got triple redundant security systems and all of this. So in order for them to give, you know, public disclosure and transparency, they set up this portal so that people can go and get information about how many CCW holders there are, how many there are per county. Well, when they set up the system, their triple redundancy was totally ignored, and they attached and used the foundation, the entire database of every CCW applicant, whether approved or denied for the last 10 years. Wow. So you're looking at hundreds of thousands and renewals and brand new. It included everybody on our dealer record of sales database, which is everybody who has sold or purchase a gun in the state of California, who knows for how long. It included everybody on the assault weapons registry list.
Wow.
And here's the kicker. It included everybody on the red flag or gun violence restraining order database. So those people that ostensibly should have their information protected more than anybody.
More. He's the pew-pew man.
Pew-pew.
We are bringing this show to you in part by Razorback Armory. They are featuring Mantis X. You want a demonstration of this so you don't just buy it online blind because you don't know what it is? Go into Razorback Armory and find out more about Mantis X, how you can become a better shooter without wasting money on ammo. You're going to love the system. They've got it there at Razorback Armory. Go to RazorbackArmory.com. Have you ever used the Mantis X?
I have not, but if it'll make me a better shooter, I'm going to have to look into that.
Dude, after 20 minutes, 94% of people are better shooters. It's that good. It's amazing technology. It really is.
So
check them out, Razorback Armory.
It takes the gun out of my hand and it shoots it, and then I'm a better shooter. Or
maybe for you.
I'm just speculating here. So,
okay. So as I mentioned, leading up to this segment, that it seems like trends start on the coast, and we're not just talking fashion trends. We're talking food trends. We're talking laws and ideas of laws. Sam Paredes is the executive director of the Gun Owners of California. He's also a member of the board of directors of Gun Owners of America, and treasurer of Gun Owners Foundation. Welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Sam, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing just great, and it's a pleasure and honor to be with you, man.
It's great having you on. Mark Cox here and as well. And, you know, I've watched from a distance what goes on in places like California and New York. And just recently we had this great Supreme Court decision kind of clarifying that these states couldn't force you to go to extreme lengths to protect yourself, as the Second Amendment allows. And yet in California and New York, they both immediately went on the attack and tried to figure out ways around the Supreme Court decision. Isn't that correct?
You are absolutely correct. Unfortunately, in New York, so far they have succeeded in passing the law and putting it into effect. Here in California, with a whole lot of hard work, we were able to defeat Senate Bill 918 that was going to emulate what they did in New York and put it on steroids to make it virtually worthless to have a concealed carry weapons permit here in the state of California. But you're correct. They hate the Second Amendment. They hate the Constitution. They hate the Supreme Court, and they hate gun owners. So they're going to do everything they possibly can to prevent people from legally carrying firearms outside of their homes.
That is crazy. Sam Paredes and the lawlessness that's going on out there is frightening for us to see on our TV screens. How long have you been a resident of California?
All my life, born in 1956, so 65 years, going on 66 years as a resident.
Wow.
Have you ever thought, because of gun laws alone, have you ever thought about moving to another state that's more Second Amendment friendly?
You know, the thought has been gone through my brain, but it was very fast and fleeting. This is my state. We understand that California either affects or infects the rest of the country. And myself and my family decided to dedicate our lives to fighting to protect and defend the Second Amendment, restore it here in California. And this is a beautiful state with a lot of wonderful people. And yeah, we have tons and tons of knuckleheads and a government that is going down the toilet. But that pendulum, too, will swing one day. But we are going to be here to fight for the Second Amendment. And now that we have the results of the Supreme Court Bruin decision, we have the tools that we need to overturn the vast majority of all gun control laws here in the state of California. And it's not going to be done without the other side going kicking and screaming. But we are confident that that California will be a Second Amendment friendly state, even though the leaders will hate it all the way.
Oh, it's true. Sam Paredes, our guest, executive director with Gun Owners of California. Maybe you could remind people, Sam, for those of us here in flyover country, what it was like in a lot of areas in California before the Supreme Court sort of stepped in here. You couldn't, like, I can go buy a gun and I can apply for concealed carry, or I can exercise my rights. We're an open carry state in Missouri. You don't even need a license anymore to carry concealed. But in California, didn't you have to prove to the local sheriff that you felt you were under some sort of a specific threat before you could exercise your Second Amendment rights?
You are, again, absolutely correct.
in the California statutes governing concealed carry weapons permits, the sheriff was required to ask for a reason of good cause and good moral character in order to even consider issuing a concealed carry weapons permit to an applicant. Now, people need to understand that the landmass, the vast majority of California is just like the rest of free America. It is the greater Bay Area and the greater Los Angeles area that constitute the significant majority of the population. But in the rest of the counties, we had sheriffs that consider themselves constitutional sheriffs. If somebody came in, wanted a CCW, they put down, what's your good cause? Self-defense, granted. What's your good cause? You exercising my Second Amendment rights, granted. So there were thousands upon thousands of CCWs that were issued to those who lived in the non-population centers. But in the greater, for the majority of the people of the state of California, you had to prove that, you know, I'm a jewelry dealer and I transport $1 million from my business to the bank every day. And then they might consider giving you a concealed weapons permit that you can use only when you're transporting the money. They would limit it. But the vast majority of them said, you know what, there's no sufficient cause. The good sheriffs were saying, when people would say, well, I need to give a reason. And he says, well, do I need to give you a reason to give? How about you drive on dark streets at night alone, which is the definition of everybody in the county I live, because it's a rural county. So they said, just put down self-defense, personal protection. That's it. But in Los Angeles and though things are changing in L.A. and Orange County, it's going much slower in the Bay Area. But, it had to be a specific reason. And then the attorney general, once the Bruin decision came down, they told all of the sheriffs, okay, you cannot use that subjective reason anymore. But you know what? You guys need to consider the good moral character. So how you evaluate good moral character gives you the ability to deny CCWs. Well, that's a load of sheep dip. That's the way they're trying to get around the law. And in this bill that they tried to pass, they actually acknowledged that good moral character clause was not sufficient because it was too subjective.
And yeah, so, absolutely it is.
We're in a fight in California, but guys, it is so much fun to get into a fight when you know absolutely sure that you're going to win. Yeah. And that's what we're doing here.
I love that.
Sam Paredes is the executive director of Gun Owners of California. And you know what? I'm proud of you for taking up the fight and staying in California. We do have homes for sale here in Missouri, just throwing it out there. But let's remind the listeners of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors what happened not too awful long ago when the attorney general leaked the names and addresses of California citizens who were in the state system because they gun owners on June 30th of this year, following the SCOTUS gun ruling, that it was published out there. However brief, it was still out there. What was the thinking? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, when the legislation was going through the Capitol, allowing the Attorney General to compile all of these databases and to share it with educational institutions, of course, only the educational and research institutions that they thought should get this information. Well, we testified that there is no way that you're going to be able to secure this information, and it is so vital. You need to redact the critical data on all of these applications so that it cannot be put out into the public. They said, no, we've got triple redundant security systems and all of this. So in order for them to give, you know, public disclosure and transparency, they set up this portal so that people can go and get information about how many CCW holders there are, how many there are per county. Well, when they set up the system, their triple redundancy was totally ignored, and they attached and used the foundation, the entire database of every CCW applicant, whether approved or denied for the last 10 years. Wow. So you're looking at hundreds of thousands, and in renewals and brand new. It included everybody on our dealer record of sales database, which is everybody who has sold or purchased a gun in the state of California, who knows for how long. It included everybody on the assault weapons registry list.
Wow.
And here's the kicker. It included everybody on the red flag or gun violence restraining order database. So those people that ostensibly should have their information protected more than anybody, their data was leaked. Now, we know, and the DOJ knows, that that entire database was downloaded by people through the internet multiple times. They don't know who got them or how many times it went out. And once it's out in the internet, it's out forever. So all that information is out in the ethernet, and somebody has access to it, and it either tells them, gives them a list of homes they don't want to rob because they right. know they are armed, or a list of homes that have arms and if they're looking to steal guns.
It's
horrible, man. It's a joke.
It's unbelievable that happened. Sam, let me get back to a point you made earlier. What happens in California affects the rest of the country, which is why your efforts out there are so important in this case. I know, relating to textbooks, I read one time that if the state of California demands certain things be included in a textbook, the textbook manufacturers will change it for the whole country because they produce so many textbooks for California. So when they cook up an idea like putting serial numbers on every bullet that you buy and making you register to buy ammunition and some of the crazy things that they've cooked up, maybe they'd never put into effect, but they cooked up in California, it could impact the rest of us just because it's such a big state, correct?
Absolutely spot on, correct. We have a law called micro-stamping where the law requires a gun to impart or imprint the make, model, and serial number in microscopic characters on the primer once it shoots it. If a manufacturer wants one of their guns to be, guys, get this. We have a roster of approved handguns. Californians can only buy guns that are on this roster. It started out with several thousand guns. We're down to less than 750, and all of them are obsolete models. There hasn't been a new handgun added to that list for, 15 years?
Wow.
Because they not only made it a safety where they dropped the gun on concrete to make sure it didn't accidentally go off. Oh, and by the way, when they developed this standard in order to knock out all of the Saturday night specials that were made of pot metal and blew up in people's hands, well, all of those manufacturers submitted guns and they all passed the test. So it was crazy, crazy, crazy. But it went from a safety test to a political correctness test. Then they said all guns to be on here have to have a loaded chamber indicator and a magazine disconnect. And then, even though there are agencies like the city of Los Angeles, when they bought guns, one of the first things they would do is remove the magazine disconnect because it puts a shooter at a tactical disadvantage. When you have one round in and you're doing a tactical mag change, you have a rock until you put another mag in, and that bullet might be the what saves your life. And then they added micro-stamping. You know, this is a technology that even the guy who invented it says is not ready for prime time. But since no manufacturer in the world uses micro-stamping, we have not had a new model gun introduced in the state of California for years, for over a decade.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. We got Sam Paredes. He is the executive director of Gun Owners of California. You know, the irony of all of this with Hollywood in Southern California, they are the propaganda machine for, you know, shoot 'em up movies. They've been pumping it out there. Alec Baldwin, thank you very much. But they've been doing this and doing this. And yet in the state, you can hardly even get, a gun or the concealed carry. Sam, we want to thank you for your time and joining us on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Maybe next time we talk, we can talk about maybe hunting in the great outdoors out in California, because I'm sure there's some good hunting out there.
There absolutely is, guys. I look forward to being with you again. God bless you, and please continue to be the voice of the Second Amendment across the Fruited Plain. You guys are doing a great job.
We appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Yep. Keep up the good work, buddy.
Yep. Gunowners.org is the website for Gun Owners of America. I know that Sam's a member of that as well. So they do great work. And if you see a lawsuit somewhere in this country against an overbearing law, chances are Gun Owners of America is part of that lawsuit. So if you're a member and you're contributing, you're helping cover those costs. I would just point that out. It's a good organization, and they make a big impact, but they need help doing that. So if you can help out, that's a great cause.
Absolutely. All right. For Mark Cox and Carl Middleman, I'm Bo Matthews. Thank you for listening to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Share the show. It's always a podcast at 971FMTalk.com and on KMOX.com. Share it with your friends to get the word out about the wonderful things and the horrible things of the Second Amendment and the Great Outdoors. Thanks for listening. See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.